Hello and welcome to The Face of Pro-Life. Today I'm speaking with Bill O'Brien, the president of the Connecticut Right to Life. Thank you for joining me today.
Glad to be here.
You're always up on all of the legislation going on in Connecticut. So what's coming up for the new legislation coming this year, 2008?
Okay. 2008 is what they call the short session. It's supposed to be about budgetary matters, but a number of years ago, the legislature started passing a two-year budget. So now they have actually no real practical use for the second year other to make a few adjustments in the budget that they passed the previous year. So, so they're basically up there with nothing to do, so they have to create some work. And, they're not supposed to bring up any other issues except if they have, some dollars attached to them in some way. We try to be creative and come up with some bills that have some dollars attached to them that relate to pro-life. Though a committee can still bring up bills that have some broad support. And one that we hope is going to come up this year, which did come up last year, was parental notification on abortion. This passed in 2007. It did get up for a informational hearing, which wasn't a full-blown public hearing where you or I could go up or anyone from the public could go up and speak. But it was both sides were invited to bring a panel of speakers. So the pro-life side had a number of speakers and the other side had a number of speakers. And over 2 or 3 hours, they presented their case for their side, and then that was it, and everybody went home.
Now, you were present at that?
I was there. I wasn't one of the speakers,
right,
but I was there.
So
right.
You were privy to the information that the
panel heard. It was open to the public to go in to listen, but just not to speak. So.
Yeah. And how did our side do as far as that was concerned?
Well, I think extremely well. We brought in a professor of law from Minnesota, a law school out there, who is really a national expert on the whole issue. And, she presented why parental notification, number one, that about 44 other states have some kind of parental involvement law, but Connecticut does not. So mm-hmm. a minor girl in Connecticut, 12, 13, 14 years old, can go up to her nearest Planned Parenthood clinic or any other abortion clinic in the state and go in and get an abortion, and her parents won't know a thing about it. She can't go into school and get an aspirin,
right,
or anything else from the nurse, but she can go down to the abortion clinic and get an abortion, and her parents will be completely in the dark.
And now, is that something that they legislated? That there used to be the unspoken law that you would have to notify a parent for such a surgery or a procedure, but then they wrote a law that said they didn't? Or is this just something that kind of evolved, that there was no legislation saying that a parent had to be involved, and so they just kind of unwritten say that it's okay?
It goes back to Roe v. Wade. I mean, up until Roe v. Wade in Connecticut, there were no abortions. Connecticut had one of the strongest laws in the country against abortion. But then suddenly it was legal throughout all 9 months of pregnancy. And, the arguments back then were, well, she's a mother. Or she's old enough to have
a baby.
Have conceived a child. So she's old enough to know, under the right of privacy that was found in the Constitution, that's not there. They said that even a minor girl has a right to privacy and a right to abortion, and it's her decision.
And was that true through all the states? And then all the states had to come through with the parental notification
right. Well, some states started passing parental involvement laws, either consent or notification. There were, of course, they were challenged right away. But over the course of some years and some different court suits and eventually the Supreme Court, they eventually said, basically, as long as you have some option out, like a court override, and a judge gives her permission, in case she feels that she can't go to her own parents for some reason,
mm-hmm.
She'd be endangered or something, she can go to a court instead. And then the Supreme Court has said then it's allowable. Even just as recent as last year, 2006, I believe it was, the Supreme Court ruled on a New Hampshire parental involvement law. Mm-hmm. So it's been ongoing, but generally they have allowed, as I said, about 44 states to come up with different versions of parental involvement laws.
So Connecticut's only one of six that do not have any kind of parental involvement in abortion. So. And the one that has been introduced or is pending in Connecticut would just be involvement. The parent doesn't have to consent. The parent just has to know.
Parental notification is what we're seeking, right? Basically, philosophically, we feel that, a parent can't give consent for an abortion because nobody should be allowed to give consent for an abortion to take innocent human life. But a parental right is to know what's happening with their child. So notification, we feel is something that we can support, and that any parent would want to know if their daughter was going for an abortion.
Right, because it's a medical procedure that does have risks, and there's so many girls who have the procedure, don't tell anybody, and then have complications, and then the parents don't know what to do because they don't know why the girl is having these complications.
Right. I mean, the girl could end up bleeding in the days or weeks after that.
Having sepsis.
She could be suicidal.
Yeah.
The rate for post-abortion suicides is several times the normal population. And why is there suddenly, this mood change or whatever in our daughter? What's happened? And they don't know.
Right.
So they can't deal with it. So it's I'm with any other kind of medical thing.
Even a tattoo,
it's a given.
Or ear piercing.
The legislature this past year had a law they were considering. I'm not sure if it passed or not, but whether to ban giving out tattoo kits, without parental consent. But they can still go get an abortion, and of course the state will pick up the tab for it and not let them know.
Wow.
So, we know that minor girls come across the state line from Massachusetts because Massachusetts for many years has had a parental consent law.
Wow.
The girls, though, are told, by sometimes school counselors, go down to Connecticut, just cross the state line, you can get an abortion there, and nobody's going to know it. And you get around Massachusetts laws.
Wow.
So Connecticut is sort of, they'll provide abortions for neighboring states.
Yeah. And we're not talking just like 17-year-olds. We're talking 14-year-olds and 15-year-olds. That's crazy. They need their parents' involvement in this.
Right. And, of course, there was this case here in Connecticut earlier this year. The girl that was missing for a year from her family. And she was eventually found, hiding, under a staircase, I guess, behind a dresser in a bedroom of this guy, Adam Galt, and up in the Hartford area. And it turns out that she had gone to Planned Parenthood in the Hartford area, I believe in West Hartford, and had an abortion there because the police found the paperwork in the home that she was discovered in. And, she had an abortion just about a month, I think, before they found her. But Planned Parenthood, didn't report that to the state, that here's a 14-year-old who shouldn't be having sex legally.
Right.
But she had the abortion, and they didn't ask any questions about,
And had they, even been law forced to at least notify the parents, then, they would have found her much sooner.
By law, they should have notified the state because
she
her boyfriend or the guy that was kidnapping her or whatever his relationship was, he was 22 or so, and she was 14. The state law at that time said, there's a two-year age difference between the minor and someone else. Then it's got to be reported as child abuse or sexual abuse. And so they should have reported it, but they didn't.
So how come we're not? This is all about protecting our children, protecting women, protecting girls. Why is there such a hesitation?
Well, they're not required. Number one, they're not required to contact the girl's parents and notify them. So that's one issue. The other issue is that, yes, sexual assault is a crime, but Planned Parenthood doesn't have to report that under current state law. If they don't know that the guy is 22 years old and she's 14.
Oh, but who brought her in? I mean, well, if she's been kidnapped, and they probably didn't ask. Yeah.
If they know about it, then it's sexual assault, and any medical personnel is a mandated reporter under state law.
So why aren't we, by law, protecting our girls from just this type of situation with a parental consent bill? I mean, what's stopping us from having a parental
notification law? Well, again, we had a majority of the committee last year, the Children's Committee. They're the ones that held the public or the informational hearing. What we'd like this year is a public hearing so anybody can go up and testify, including young girls like that one that was involved in that case. Whether she testified, I don't know, but I'm sure there's some others, that have been in that situation. And, in many cases, they're forced into abortions, usually by the guy's parents. So the guy's parents know all about it.
Right.
And, they don't want him, burdened, so-called, with the child and child support and everything.
Sure.
So it's in their interest to have her get an abortion, but it's not in their interest to tell her parents about it. So it's a double standard. She may be forced in for other reasons. There was a case up in, there's been a number of forced abortion cases.
Right.
Sometimes, unfortunately,
by the parents. By the parents themselves.
Right.
Right.
But, in so many cases, they say they're pro-choice.
Right.
But Planned Parenthood doesn't complain when a girl's brought in against her will.
Her own will, right.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's one piece of legislation that we would like to get passed. What else is on the docket?
Well, there's always the fetal homicide law that we're always concerned about. There's been many cases where, in Connecticut, if a pregnant woman is killed on federal property, such as the Coast Guard Academy or your local post office, under federal law, there would be two murder charges brought. Or two cases of homicide if the mother and child die. Mm-hmm. But as soon as they're off federal property and on anywhere else in Connecticut, if the mother and child die, there's only going to be one homicide charge because Connecticut doesn't recognize the unborn child as a second person. Federal law does.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, there's these cases just keep coming up every year where a woman is killed, oftentimes in the late stages of pregnancy.
Yeah.
And then there's car accidents, too, so there could be vehicular homicide or manslaughter cases, but they don't happen because if the child dies, then they don't recognize that another person died. So,
that's so key. We saw the Lacey Peterson.
Yeah.
Case where, they did, California actually had the law that he was charged with,
right,
with both. Mm-hmm. But we really need something to deter specifically men from killing pregnant women, because the number one cause of death in pregnant women, mm-hmm, is homicide.
Right.
And, we're supposedly all about choice, but when a woman chooses to give birth, she's in danger of being killed because she didn't choose abortion.
Mm-hmm.
So because we have abortion on demand, women who choose life are at risk.
Right. It's interesting that Canada, which is extremely pro-abortion, there's only the pro-life movement in Canada is in its infancy, really. I think they've only had a national march for life for like the last 6 years or so. But right now, the parliament up there is considering a fetal homicide law.
Wow.
Because there was a celebrated case up there where, again, they only brought one charge when there should have been two. So the Parliament is starting to consider that. So hopefully Connecticut will do that again. They've considered it in the past, and what they've done is enhanced the penalties for killing or assaulting a pregnant woman, but not recognizing that, you know, the second life there. And it's interesting because oftentimes in these assaults or attacks on a pregnant woman, if a woman is assaulted and she's not pregnant, she'll be assaulted like in the face, right, or the upper body or whatever. But when she's pregnant, they attack her stomach.
Right, so that you know what they're trying to do.
Right.
They're not trying to hurt the woman. They're trying to kill the baby.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So punish them for the crime that they're actually committing.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it's that'll be one thing that we'll see if we can get that bill introduced once again. So unfortunately, it usually takes a celebrated case where people get up in arms because the hands of the prosecutors are tied because they can't do what they want to do, which is bring
the extra charge.
Right. So. We never like to see that happen again, but we know it's going to almost every year.
Yeah. Like, as we said, the homicide is the number one cause of death in pregnant women.
Yep.
So what's going on with the human embryonic stem cell research? We passed, the legislation passed the funding for human embryonic stem cell research in Connecticut.
Right. We're in the third year now of funding. It's a 10-year cycle where they're going to give out $10 million a year for 10 years.
What breakthroughs have we gotten?
We're going to buy a new building.
Oh.
You can't use federal funds, so we're going to use part of our $10 million a year to buy a new building across from UConn Health Center because you can't, have equipment bought with federal funds mixed in with equipment bought with state funds because of the so we're buying bricks instead of putting it into research. Now, of course, there's been the big breakthrough recently where Connecticut was pushing ahead with embryonic stem cell research using embryos, and apparently they've got two couples that have said that they will donate their embryos, frozen embryos, so that one of the researchers at UConn can kill them for their embryonic stem cells. And, so this could be happening anytime soon.
When's the mortar dries.
Right. But now everything sort of changed a little bit, at least because of the new discovery, a Japanese scientist and some, I think, here
in Wisconsin.
In Wisconsin. And, they found a new way to get what are like embryonic stem cells, but which don't come from an embryo.
Right.
So you don't have to kill an embryo to get these stem cells. And sort of reprogrammed from regular skin cells.
Yeah.
And it'll be interesting to see what happens both on the federal level and the state level. I'm sort of expecting that the federal government's going to now, of course, they've been funding giving a lot of funds for adult stem cell research.
Mm-hmm.
The ban was only on embryonic stem cell mm-hmm. research funding. And now that there's this new method, I'm expecting that the federal government may start opening up funds, or in fact, they probably already can do it.
Right. Well, I'm sure they did. That's how they got the breakthrough in Wisconsin to begin with.
Right. So.
And it's amazing because. I was reading. This is like huge in the scientific world, in the mm-hmm. scientific community. This is really huge, and there's getting a lot of play. But I didn't see much of it in the regular, secular media. But I did see that the researcher from Wisconsin. Now he was the first person to isolate human embryonic stem cells. And he's the one who's sold many of the stem cell lines that even President Bush has said are okay to use just mm-hmm. because they'd already been developed. And he himself said that he was always uncomfortable using doing the human embryonic stem cells, and
right.
that this is huge breakthrough. And now mm-hmm. they can basically manipulate any skin cells, and he used neonatal cells. And they can now trick these cells into becoming these stem cells that they said could only come from human embryos. Mm-hmm. So this is huge, because this now they can be able to do cell replacement in humans and not have the rejection factor, because you can use your own stem cells just like you would for adult stem cells. I mean, this is really, really big, and you don't really see the play.
Right, and there is growing pressure for human cloning, including here in Connecticut. And there was some people were trying to get a national ban on human cloning,
right.
And that was they weren't able to get much traction. But now, I mean, the benefit of the human cloning would have been, besides killing, the clones, is that it would have been from your own body,
right.
And cutting down on the chance of rejection. But now that they can take these, reprogram cells from your own body, as you said, they won't be rejected. So that gets around that problem.
Right.
And hopefully that's going to, again, take the pressure off of the drive for cloning. And maybe we can get a true ban through Congress now to ban cloning, because
right.
It's not really necessary.
Yeah, so just so people are clear, the cloning would have taken an adult cell, taken the DNA from an embryo, basically killing the embryo, injecting the DNA into a cell so that it would have been more like your cell, because it was your cell, and then it would have caused multiplied and become a human embryonic stem cell that you can then use in your own body, whereas this one takes your cell, tricks it into reproducing like an embryo, and although it would never become a human being, you couldn't take that cell and put it in a woman and have it become a human being.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So there's no moral dilemma using those cells. And so here in Connecticut, we've spent 3 years, $30 million, mm-hmm. building buildings.
Buying buildings
mm-hmm. for UConn and Yale,
and
both
Wesleyan,
and who do not need the money to begin with to build anything,
mm-hmm.
but simply because they couldn't do the research in a lab in a building where federal funds were used for any other research,
mm-hmm.
because the lights, the heating, the refrigeration, other things were being paid for by the federal government, so they couldn't do the research in those buildings. So we had to build them their own buildings, mm-hmm. to do research that is now obsolete.
It's obsolete already, before they've even bought or moved across the street to the building yet. So that's your tax dollars at work. But unfortunately, these researchers in Connecticut have been quoted in the media as saying that, well, there's still a need to push ahead with what they were doing.
Who's going to admit they're wrong?
Right. And unfortunately, as I said, there's two embryos that are scheduled to die, essentially, here in Connecticut very soon if they push ahead with that. Whereas those lives could be saved or at least not destroyed.
What I don't understand, though, is in other states, it seems that their legislatures have allowed the people to vote. We had the big stem cell vote in Missouri and
California.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and the legislature actually had the people vote, even New Jersey,
and they voted it down.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So why is it that in Connecticut, with the same sex marriage, with the human embryonic stem cell research, why do our lawmakers never give us the chance to vote? They take it all in their own hands.
Well, in other states, they have an easier process to get it on the ballot. Though here in Connecticut, they could put it on the ballot for referendum if they wanted to. But apparently they don't want to, because they've got the votes in the legislature to do what they want, and they don't want to be put it out for the people to have their say, which might be the opposite of what they want. So unfortunately, it's being shoved down our throats in Connecticut without a choice. Now, of course, we have a chance to vote. 2008 is an election year for not only president and Congress, but mm-hmm. also for the state legislature. legislature. So hopefully this will be an issue
Where do we find out where our legislators vote, legislators vote on these issues? Because when I get the pamphlet in the mail from my legislator, she doesn't say, oh, yes, and we passed this human embryonic stem cell stuff, and oh, yes, I voted for the same-sex civil unions. You know, those aren't things that they tout. You know, they tell us about, you know, how they're, you know, saving money for the senior citizens and stuff like that. But how do we find out where they stand on these issues?
Well, I just go to the Connecticut General Assembly website, just www.cga.connecticut or .ct. Or just do a search, Google or Yahoo search for Connecticut General Assembly, and it'll come right up. And you know, there's a number of things, tools on that website, but one of them is, you know, a vote. You know, is the roll call votes on each bill that was passed, you know, for each year. And you know, you can also first, you know, since you may not know the bill number, you can do a search for the certain topic. So if you put in human cloning, or abortion, or whatever the issue is, or gay marriage, or
parental notification,
you know, those different subjects will come up, and you'll see the bill title, and then you just go to the roll call vote, and it's there. So it's, you know, once you get used to it, it's fairly easy to find it. But the interesting, I'm my legislator. What was it, 3 years ago, I guess, when they passed the this funding bill for research. He did put it in his newsletter to me, saying that, you know, we passed a ban on
cloning. Right.
But it wasn't a ban on cloning. He lied, you know, because it was legalizing human cloning. So you can't always believe what they put in their newsletters.
Right.
If they tell you something, don't necessarily believe it.
So when he said that they banned human cloning for reproduction so that you could not. This is what they were really afraid of, is that somebody would clone somebody and then actually bring that baby come to fruition, whereas, you know, it was a clone and kill bill.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So long as you were going to kill the embryo, you could clone the embryo.
Right. As long as you kill it within the first 2 weeks or so, you know, then it's legal. But if you allow it to keep on living, then that's against the law.
That is just so sleazy.
Yep.
So these are the things that we really should be looking at in not just the current legislators, but the ones who will be running up against them. And we need to find out how these people stand before we go to the polls in November 2008.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. We hope that you've learned something. We hope that when you talk with your family and friends, you bring up these issues and see, educate them. And we hope that when you look in the mirror the next time, you realize yours is the face of pro-life. Join us again next time.